Here's what's coming up on today's show.
The market's going down. I need to get out of the market. The problem is you don't know when that's going to switch and go the other way. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter.
No.
Because to capture the long-term market return, the best way to do that, really the only way to do it for sure, is to just stay in it.
Welcome to the Retirement Cafe with certified financial planners Dan Reese and Brent Oliver. At our cafe, we believe your retirement plan should be life-giving and custom-made, just like a hot cup of coffee. Here in mid-Michigan, with an office in Jackson, the Retirement Cafe is open for business.
Hello and welcome into the Retirement Cafe. Glad to have you on the show today. We're going to discuss the recent market drop and whether or not there are any positives that may come out of this. I know it's a topic that many people are talking about right now, and many investors have been pretty anxious about what they are seeing on their monthly investment statements. And guys, you know, can you talk a little bit about what has happened and kind of what's been causing these sharp declines?
Well, we'd rather not, but
I wish there wasn't this, but
unfortunately it's part of the deal, right? I mean, this year has been interesting because what started the decline early in the year is actually different now than what it was then. And early in the year, everybody was worried about the inflation story and that the Fed wasn't raising rates fast enough.
Yeah. And then now the Fed's raising the rates too fast.
And
fear of, you know, some type of a hard landing for the economy. And so, a lot of emotion in there and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is, it is interesting because it's like a lot of things in life where it's easier to get anxious about things than to be happy about things. And so the whole thing with the Fed, and we're going to talk more about this, but just to kind of a quick thing, you know, they set the rates for overnight lending rates for banks. And so the idea is if they make it too attractive for banks to put their money with them, they won't loan it out
to
companies. And so then companies will struggle, won't be able to get the capital they need, and it'll hurt their growth and it'll cause a recession, right? Yep. That's the idea behind it.
And so those are the fears now,
right?
As they've pushed it up, it has been quickly. I mean, this is
we
more than what was maybe initially expected.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, that fear is just that, hey, they're doing too much now, and now we're gonna have a problem.
Yeah.
So we want to just talk a little bit today about, you know, number one, what the reality is, how this compares historically, maybe some good things that could come out of it, and really just a better understanding of, you know, what's going on.
Right.
Because it's been an interesting year because both markets have gone down, bonds and stocks.
And so, I mean, it's just not a interest rate only situation, obviously. There's not ever just one reason. But, you know, we have supply chain issues that have affected things. You know, the media certainly never helps. And so media tends to bring a lot of emotion to investors, which can really make things, when they're volatile, even more so volatile.
Yeah, because it's easy to trade now, right? Anybody can get on their account pretty much and sell if they want to sell. And even though it's interesting, you know, as we work through this, we'll give you some tips along the way. But, you know, the old saying is don't sell when things are down.
Right.
I mean, you'd think over time that this lesson would be learned. And I do think it's, in some regards, better. Some people are better about it, but you could still see.
Yeah.
You know, across the markets, that there's just a lot of downward pressure on prices because people are afraid, right?
So, and I think also, I mean, we don't have this in notes, but I think the elections, the midterm elections, plays a role in some of this too.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of times, depending on what side of the aisle you sit on, you think, well, if this side wins, we're in trouble, or if the other side wins, whatever side you are on.
Yeah.
But the reality is a lot of times what we see, and I think we've talked about this in other podcasts, is that the market doesn't like uncertainty. Mm-hmm. So regardless of who wins, we'll at least know who won once it's over.
Yeah, generally after elections, things settle down because, you know, this stuff's cumulative. Like people think of, well, rates are going up, there's an election, there's a lot of, you know, negative stuff out there in the media, it all piles on, right? Yeah. It's like a snowball effect. All these things kind of work together, and
Russia.
It creates Russia, like all these things. So it makes people uneasy, and there's a lot of uncertainty, which is the word that the market hates, right?
Yes.
And so that's what you get.
Well, let's talk about those bond markets specifically, because I thought, and you always hear, like, bonds are the safe play, right? So I thought these were supposed to be protected against losses.
Yeah, it's interesting, and part of the problem with, you know, bonds are all tied to whatever current rates are, right?
Right.
So how have rates been the last 5 years, Brent?
Well, they've been really, and we've talked about that, they're going up right now, so they've been really, really low.
Yeah.
Right? And so as interest rates go up, which needed to happen, right? They can't be at the at this zero, basically, for this long of a period of time. As they go up, existing bonds values will go down.
Yeah, yep. And that's I always give the example of, like, think if you went and bought a CD at the bank, you bought a 3-year CD at 2%, and you did that like in the end of 2021, and now in 2022, you can go buy that same 3-year CD for 4%. Well, if you tried to sell that 2-year CD, somebody's probably not going to give you the full amount you paid for it, right?
They would only be willing to pay you what it would cost so that they could get the equivalent of a 4% yield, which is what a new one would get.
Yep. So that means they give you less money for it.
Right.
And that's what's happening in the bond markets is that these new treasuries are up, all these bonds, you know, the interest is now, the going rate is higher. And so the old ones just aren't worth as much. And it can be pretty substantial, the actual downside. And the one thing that I think is important to understand is that it does work like a teeter-totter. So rates go up, existing bond values go down. But the longer-term bond that there is, the more it is affected. So what we mean by that is just like that CD example, 5-year CD, 3-year CD, whatever year CD you might be thinking about, bonds work the same way. You know, you're buying a certain term bond. So once bonds get past about a 5-year maturity, they tend to become really, really reactive when it comes to changes in rates.
Right.
So
right. And so that's, you know, that's our preference, obviously, in our portfolios, is to keep things short term just for that exact scenario where when there are changes in rates, that the value of our existing bonds wouldn't change that much.
Yeah. And but what's interesting, because it's been so substantial and went from zero to, you know, the 10-year is actually up to, it's pushing 4%, you know, upper threes. And so even short-term bonds, we just looked at just a couple quick examples. Vanguard short-term bond index through yesterday was down 5% year-to-date. Those are short-term bonds, right? How about the total bond, which includes
the
long?
Yeah, and this is a pretty big downturn. It is almost 14% year-to-date.
Which is unbelievable. I mean,
that's a very, very significant downturn in a bond market. And that's really because of how quickly, and we talked about it at the beginning, remember how they weren't moving fast enough and now they're moving too fast. Well, that when you're moving those rates up quickly like that, that's what can happen.
Yeah. So we've experienced that. So yeah, generally bonds are the safe part of your portfolio, but they can go down. And just a quick example where it works the other way. A few years ago, they were putting out some, research on, hey, if you look at the last so many years, it was like a 20-year time frame, long-term bonds have actually outperformed stocks. And I use that example because it works the other way too. You know, remember in the early 80s, the rates got really, really high, and then they consistently came down throughout the next 20, 25 years, 30 years. So what happened is that it artificially pushed up the total return on bonds.
Yeah.
So it works both ways, and we're just on the other end of it right now.
Well, I know the stock and bond investments have just been all kind of going down in the same year. So I know a lot of people have been wondering kind of, what do I need to be doing? What actions can I be taking? So what are your suggestions?
Well, first of all, I mean, there's different suggestions for different time periods or where you are in your life. So let's start just by thinking about, if you're still working, we're going to give you a few things that you should be doing in this situation. So the first and most important is just stay the course with your long-term investment. So when you have an investment strategy, a good sound investment strategy, the best thing you can do is stick with that over a long period of time. Trying to change it because you think it's broken when it's doing really what it's designed to do. I mean, when markets go down, if you have a lot of stock or in this case bonds, that's going to go down, right?
Yeah.
We know that, and it's not the time to change it.
Yeah, and it's not that you're doing anything wrong. A lot of times people feel like, oh, I need to adjust this because it's only smart.
Right.
The market's going down. I need to get out of the market. The problem is you don't know when that's going to switch and go the other way. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter.
No.
Because to capture the long-term market return, the best way to do that, really the only way to do it for sure, is to just stay in it.
Right. And in this case, you're working, right? So you have a great opportunity to continue to buy in while the prices are low. So keep your contribution plan in place and continue doing the thing that you can control, which is continuing to save.
Yeah. I mean, saving, you're buying stuff on sale.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great timing. I mean, the reality is when markets go down 20, 25%, your risk is a lot lower now than it was before it went down.
Right.
And people often think the other side, right? Like, oh, markets are up, risk is low. Well,
right.
We can see
yeah.
it's after they drop is when your risk is actually low. One of the things, too, we tell everybody, make sure that you've got a good rebalancing plan. So even if you're mostly stock because maybe you're younger, but you have some fixed income, make sure that those have some rebalancing schedule. So as, you know, and in this case, with maybe the stocks dropping more than bonds, a good rebalancing program may actually sell off some bonds and buy into the market as it's down right now.
Right.
And that can really help. And then as things recover, the opposite occurs, right? You sell off those earnings those gains on the stock side and buy back into your fixed income position. But many 401ks, many platforms have that available.
Right. Yes.
And so make sure that that's happening.
And sometimes there are selections that you need to make. So that's what Dan's getting at is if it's just not going to automatically do this in your 401k, for example, there may be something, a box that you need to check that just says automatic rebalance. So that things go back to the allocation that you're trying to get. So if you wanted 80% stock, for example, for somebody working, it's not a recommendation, but just an example, and 20% bonds, well, you might be at 70-30 right now,
right,
if you're not rebalancing. And so that would, if you're rebalancing, you're just taking it back to that 80-20.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're getting close to retirement, the last thing for if you're currently working and you're going through this, it's a good time to really sit down with a certified financial planner. Make sure that your allocation is sound for what you need to make sure that as you transition into retirement, you've got some money that's available to kind of get you through from an income perspective till markets can recover. Because we know markets recover, we just don't know when.
Right.
Like, we don't know how long, so we just have to be aware of that.
All right, what about the retirees then, the people that are dependent on these withdrawals to support their income? And while the market's down, what can they be doing?
Yeah, this is really important. And what Brent and I have gone to, which we think works really well, is what are called risk-based income guardrails. And so, you know, in essence, what we're talking about there is just we can look at how much income you're taking and how much your overall resources will support at the current portfolio level and make sure it's within those
right.
guardrails, right?
Yeah. Yep. And it's very powerful. So it'll tell you this is what your portfolio can support, right? Not just your portfolio, but all your resources. So Social Security, a pension, all of your savings. We can look at this and say over a long period of time, this is what it will support. And the guardrails are just like what would have to happen with your portfolio for you to make any changes to that. So if it goes down below a certain level, do I need to take a little bit of a pay cut for a short period of time to allow my portfolio to rebound? So that's what that guardrail is. Once you get outside of it, you're kind of in a danger zone. So we want to make sure that you're staying within those guardrails.
Yeah, and what I think is interesting is that we've been meeting with lots of clients over this year and looking at everybody's situation and where they're at with withdrawals. And what we found is that we've worked with clients to develop a solid plan, most people are totally fine.
Yeah.
Like they're resources are still fine. Even though markets are down what they're down, they don't have to take a pay cut.
Right.
Like they still have quite a bit of room. You know, their portfolio might need to go down another 15% before they'd have to take a small pay cut.
Right.
To keep everything on target. And so that's one of the things that can really give you a lot of peace of mind. If you're worried, hey, what do I need to be doing? I'm watching these losses. Am I going to run out of money? Because that's what everybody thinks.
Exactly.
Yep. So it's a really good way to just kind of regain control over your retirement income plan.
And a lot of the reason why they're within that range is just because, one, the plans account for this. I mean,
yes.
that's a really important part in all of this is that this isn't some unprecedented event. You know, like a good, solid retirement plan should consider that this is going to happen and it's going to happen again in the future.
Yeah. Right?
Like this is just part of a market cycle that happens.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you hear a lot of people talk about something like the 4% rule, and they're like, well, why could I only pull 4% out of my portfolio? This is exactly why. Because these times happen, and they're going to happen again, like Brent was saying, and understanding a well-constructed plan allows you to go through it without having it impact your retirement income.
Right.
And that's the number one goal, is you want consistency across your retirement. Nobody likes going through downturns. I mean, I'm yet to meet anybody that does. But the reality is, if you've got a good plan, you can have a little bit more confidence that it's going to be okay.
Right.
Right. A couple other things out there.
Yeah. We already talked about rebalancing. So you want to make sure that you are rebalancing, because that's controlling a lot of times the level of risk that's in your portfolio. So if your portfolio gets out of whack, you may be assuming, depending on the situation, more or less risk than you're really comfortable with.
Yeah. Yep.
And then, you know, we talk, and we've done this before, we talk about tax loss harvesting. So for after tax accounts, if there's opportunities to capture losses right now, it's a good time to do that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing that Brent and I always talk about with clients, is that you can't really separate your investment plan and your tax plan in retirement, especially. They're connected. And this can apply when you're still working as well. But you know, the idea is when markets go down, if you can sell off and realize a loss, so you can put that in your back pocket, replace the position immediately so you're never out of the market, and then have that for down the road when you have gains, that can be really valuable, because in essence, you didn't have to do anything special and you just created maybe a little bit of free money.
Right.
You know, that you wouldn't have had otherwise. So that's
and that leads right to the next one, which is a perfect segue to it, is Roth conversions. If it's part of your overall plan, it's an excellent time to do it, because if those stocks are down, you can move that over at a reduced price, pay less tax on it. When they rebound in the Roth, you've got more money in there that's tax free.
Yeah, you could almost do the math. Say you want to convert 100,000 last year, and now the market's down 20. Let's use easy math.
Yep.
Say now you could literally convert 80 and get the same
bang for your buck.
Yeah.
Right.
And when it recovers,
you're paying tax on 80 instead of 100, and then it's going to jump back up to 100. And
yeah, you win.
Yep. Big time.
We're talking about the short-term pain in the market will lead to long-term gains potentially. You know, I've heard recently someone say that markets don't always reflect the current economy. What does that even mean?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, they're two different things.
They are.
Right? I mean, that's the reality of it. And markets tend to be forward-looking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the economy is really more what's happening to right now.
Right.
And so the market tends to be ahead of the economy.
Yeah, and like, so let's look at today. I mean, really, like, you look around, most people would say the economy's pretty strong. I mean, unemployment's super low. People have been getting raises. Everybody's hiring. Everybody, you know, all the companies that I see and talk to, their orders are good. They're, you know, they've got plenty of work. You go into restaurants, they're packed. You know, all these different things. I flew a couple weeks ago. The airport was packed,
right?
And so that kind of, to me, represents pretty good economy right now, wouldn't you think? But is the market pretty good right now?
Not so good. Yeah, and we're seeing the same thing. We talked some about interest rates. We're seeing the same thing, right? So interest rates there's reactions in interest rates are rising on what they think the Fed is going to do, maybe in November or December, October, November, December. Right. So the same thing's happening on that side.
Yeah, it's really interesting to watch. I mean, if you're like a I guess it'd be a sociologist that that studies groups of people versus a psychologist, and like just looking at human reactions, because one of the things we try to protect ourselves, right?
Yeah.
Everybody does that. So like deep down is like people have these feelings like something bad's gotta happen. Like the Fed's raising rates, something bad's gotta happen. And so that emotion pushes markets down, even though maybe if you were just taking a picture of, you know, what are these companies worth based on how they're doing, you'd be like, man, that doesn't seem right.
Right.
Like, are they 25% like less valuable today than they were at the beginning of the year when they've been that busy and are hiring and not laying people off?
Right. I mean, Apple's having its own problems, but I'll use them as an example, because what we know is that if the Fed raises rates, does that mean that somebody is less likely to buy an iPhone?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably not going to impact their profits that much.
Right.
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 And so it's really interesting how everything will fall based on a little bit of news that has really nothing to do with the companies.
Yeah. Like it's all about, again, you're saying it's predictive, right?
Yes.
They think, well, if this happens, then this has to follow. And what we know is that's why markets do crazy things. Like all of a sudden news comes in that didn't match what the consensus thought was going to happen.
Right.
And you get a big reaction, and that can be up or down with markets because it's different than what people thought, right?
Exactly.
But one of the things that I love, Warren Buffett, who I really enjoy listening to, because if you ever are nervous about markets, he's probably one of the best people you could just listen to talk, because he's seen it all more or less through his career. But one of the things he said is, when you invest in stocks, you own a collection of businesses and share in their long-term prosperity. And he says, I always remember that.
Yeah.
Like you're basically, it's not, stock market isn't some crazy entity out there. When you invest in a broad-based group of stocks, you're investing in those companies. You own part of them.
Right.
So as they continue to do well over time, you will, kind of take part in those gains and success, even though it doesn't happen like lockstep.
Right.
So
future earnings, that's what you're buying, right? And so it's just really important to remember that what occurs in one day really has no impact on the long-term value of that stock.
Yeah, but it's also the risk that you're apparent. This is when you can see the risk. Like, long-term you win. Short-term, generally, most all the time you win long-term, but in the short-term, there's risk. And that's what we've seen this year.
Well, let's try to put it in perspective a little bit. And look a little big picture. How do these current rates, both interest rates and inflation rates, compare to the historical numbers?
This is one of the things I think's super interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, because people are really freaking out, right, about the Fed rate, or maybe it's a mortgage rate or different things like that, where they're feeling like they're really, really high.
Right.
Right now. And relative to where they just were, I mean, anything's high compared to zero. Right.
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk a little bit about the long-term Fed rate is average is about 4.61%.
Yeah. Which it's funny because right now Fed rate's at about, it's the 3 to 3.25%. Their goal, and they've said it in the last conference, their last press release, their goal is to get it to 4.6 by the end of the year, the long-term average. Yeah. It's not to get it to 7, 8, 10. It is to get it to, the long-term average by the end of the year. And what's interesting about that is that we have short memories, and that's why it creates a lot of short-term stress. And that's why we kind of said, well, short-term pain lead to long-term gain. Not that long ago, late 90s, I think my mortgage rate was 8.5%, right? And people are, now they're up to, I think I talked to someone today, they had locked one in at 6.7 or somewhere in there. But when they were used to 3.
Yeah, well, I had a client in earlier in the week in the 80s, the mortgage rates were 13, 14, 15% sometimes, and they're at 7 right now.
Yeah. I had a client in yesterday, and they said, our first house we bought on land contract because we couldn't afford the bank rate, and their land contract was 11%.
Yeah.
The bank was like, I think he said 15 or 16%, But the point is that rates are not punitive right now. They're not like everybody's worrying about this rate's too high, it's going to sink companies. Well, the reality is we're not even to the average yet, and companies have done fine when the rates were much higher than what they are right now. And so I think that's important to keep in mind, when you start looking at that stuff. But we do have some numbers that I found interesting. So the highest number that we saw for the Fed rate was 19%. In 1981.
Wow.
Jeez.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
It's at 3.
That's unbelievable.
And just more recently, like in 2000, it was 6.5. And 2007, before the financial crisis, it was 5.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody was saying, hey, at that point in time, the rates are too high for companies.
Right.
And it was only 2.4 in 2019.
Right.
But so I want to talk a little bit about inflation, Brent. What do you got there?
Inflation, the last number that was reported was somewhere around 8%, right?
Yeah.
Which is
high.
It's high. I mean, there's no doubt about that. The long term, but I also, before I go on to the long term average, we have to think about where we've been.
Yeah.
Because it has been high, but it hasn't been high in the last several years. For a long period of time, we've had pretty low inflation.
We have.
And so the long-term average is 3.2%.
Yeah, and that's kind of what's funny is that they have economists kind of get together and they look at what do they expect the inflation to be moving forward. So everybody's kind of, let me back up, because everybody was really nervous about inflation in the beginning of the year. Now people actually, they'll talk about it, like, can't believe how much groceries are, right. Which is true. But they don't, it's kind of almost like not at the forefront anymore.
Right.
It's just kind of like, well, that's what they are. But so economists, what they'll do is they'll say, hey, what do we see for inflation to, you know, look like the next 5 years? So they run these plots out. And last year, they thought the five-year number would be about 3%. A month ago, it was 2.9. The last one was 2.8.
Right.
So they already expect inflation to be below the long-term average for the next 5 years, and it keeps going down.
Right.
So, I mean, I would just, like anybody listening out there, I'd say, hey, be aware that inflation will work itself out. And so for the long-term outlook, it's going to be okay.
Right. Right. And just so that everybody's clear, like this isn't some 8% is high, but it's not some unprecedented event. Like we have some numbers here. 1946, inflation was 18.1%.
Can you even, I mean, 18% inflation.
I mean, it does hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, we all go to the grocery store. We all go, you know, to get gas or whatever it is you're buying. And things, you can tell that it's more.
Yeah.
But it's not 18. 1979, 13.3%. 1981 was 8.9%. So pretty similar to where we sit.
Yeah,
right,
and if you look at the charts after that, 81, it dropped down to the threes and fours the rest of the decade, and then it kind of even dropped further after that. There were some blips here and there. And inflation works that way. You'll get a year where it's higher, and then you'll get years where it's almost non-existent when you look at the long-term chart. So it is just good to understand, to put in perspective, that interest rates are not high when you look at historical numbers. Inflation's high right now, but the outlook's very reasonable moving forward from now on.
Yeah, those numbers are very interesting. I can't imagine 18% inflation and 19% interest rate. That would be amazing. So after the market drop, are stocks and bonds, you think they're a good value right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, it's just anything you look at, we've got a company that produces a lot of good research, Dimensional Funds, and they've got all kinds of market data. And what's that say, Brent? Like typically after a 20% drop in the market?
Yeah, which is about where we sit right now. So after a 20% decline in the market, and what we're looking at here is the U.S. Total Market Index, Fama French Total Market Index. So the one-year cumulative average going back from 1926 to 2021, the 1 year after this downturn, 22.2% return.
So it bounces back.
Bounces right back. The three-year cumulative average, 41.1, right? And then the five-year cumulative average out of all those markets, nearly 72%.
Yeah. So, I mean, the reality is that generally speaking, after stocks reset like this, generally on average, the returns are really strong after that. And that's what we always talk about, and we try to preach to everybody, that all of our clients and anybody that wants to listen to the show, is that discipline is so important, because the only way you get that is to stay put, because you never know when it's going to change. I've told this story many times. I remember 2009 in March when the markets had just gone down and down for months. And I remember that last day it went down, because I had a conversation with a long-term client and said, hey, it'll get better. Stay the course. Literally the next day it flipped. And the markets were up, I don't know, it was like some ridiculous amount, 70% the rest of the year. I mean, it was crazy. And the reality is nobody knows when it's going to flip, but you stay put, keep doing what you're doing, and good things happen, because the returns do eventually come there.
I mean, Dimensional also, I was reading some of the resources for this that they put out, and they gave a idea. I mean, we all think of the market as a roller coaster at times, right? And so they talked about, well, basically, I mean, if you're really afraid of the downhills, right, which in the markets, no one likes them, right?
Right.
They can be scary for a lot of people. Well, if you jump off the roller coaster halfway down the hill because you're uncomfortable with it, when it goes back up, you don't get to be back. You're not on it. Right.
right.
And so you never know when that's going to turn, like Dan's saying. I just think it's a good way to think about it.
Yeah, it's a good visual. And the other thing, like historical price to earnings ratios on stocks are very competitive right now.
Yep.
Quite a bit below long-term averages, which is a good sign moving forward. In the bond rates, what's interesting is that the bonds, we're not saying the rates won't continue to go up some. It sounds like they will. But I think the shock part of it is likely over, so it'll be more gradual moving forward. Because remember, the bond markets price in what the Fed says they're going to do.
Right.
So they've already priced in that the Fed said they're going to raise it by the end of the year to 4.6. So it's not a surprise.
Right.
So, I mean, from that standpoint, that's a good thing. Feel like overall things should be a pretty good value now moving forward.
Yeah, we hope so, for sure. What other positives can we find after a market downturn? I know we're looking for that long-term gain potentially and the silver linings that are out there, but what are some positives that might come from this?
Yeah, I mean, I think like we talked about it, market resets serve a purpose. I mean, they do. They help in many ways. And even like, keep in mind, companies, they watch their stock prices. And so companies also that you own, they're looking at everything they do when their stocks drop and saying, hey, can we improve in any area to make us more efficient and better at what we do? Guess what that gives you better returns.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because companies are forced to find a way to become more profitable, right? I mean, they're no different than a lot of households, right? Like households can have something happen where they're like, hey, you know, we've got to tighten up our belt a little bit. They've become more efficient. They are using less money. Same thing with companies. They figure companies maybe are in an innovative way or different things like that, but they're finding ways to become more profitable.
Yeah, I always like to use the analogy of your internal thermostat. Like Brent was saying, if all of a sudden your savings account gets a little lower, you look at what you're spending money on, right?
Right.
And so, but if things get really good, you tend to be more carefree.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with companies. They act the same way. So it's a good thing to think about when these things happen. Everybody tends to tighten the belt and get a little better at what they're doing.
Yeah, I know that we all have to take those steps. So hopefully you're taking those as well. What about interest rates as they continue to go up? Do you think that'll help with returns?
I think this is one of the most important things, especially if you're retired, because typically a retired investor might have anywhere from 30 to 50% of their money in fixed type investments. And it's not been good lately.
No,
there's nothing pretty much.
The last, I mean, several years, a lot of that's been around 1% in that part of your portfolio. So if you have, like Dan was talking about, 30, 40, 50% of your portfolio is expected return, or the return that it's received over that period of time is 1%, it's going to really pull the returns down.
Yeah. Right? And so on the flip side, now that we're seeing these better interest rates coming, that's a really good thing. I think overall it stabilizes returns too. Because one of the things that occurs that's kind of a side note on this is that when rates are as low as they've been for so long, many investors take more risk than they normally would. They put more money in stocks because they're like, I'm getting nothing on the fixed. I don't even want any money there. And so what it does is it kind of makes the market a little bit more volatile.
Yeah.
And I think with rising rates, I think you could see a little more stability because people get a reward for having some of that money in their fixed side of the equation. Yeah. And I think that's kind of something that no one really talks about, but could have a pretty positive effect, especially for people that are retired, you know?
Well, it's gives us some perspective on kind of where we stand. And I know people still probably have some questions, which again, I encourage you to follow up. AveryWealth.com is the website. But are there any simple actions someone can be taking right now to give them peace of mind through all this volatility?
Yeah, just to kind of summarize what we talked about earlier, if you're still working, stay disciplined. Keep your savings program in place. Stick to your long-term allocation. If you are getting close to retirement, we always recommend sitting down with a certified financial planner. Make sure you've got a good plan in place so when you transition from work to retirement that you've got money in the right places to support that. And if you're retired, you know, really make sure you understand those risk-based income guardrails. And if you don't understand that, give us a call. We'd be happy to kind of explain how it might apply to you. But, you know, the reality is it's a way to fully understand if what you're doing with your resources is sustainable or not, or if based on the market downturn, you need to make a change, a small adjustment generally for a short amount of time in order to keep on track to make sure you never run out of money and can continue to support your lifestyle. But and the last thing is just always remember taxes. Anytime you get movements like this, you really want to pay attention to what your long-term tax strategy is, because oftentimes you can make some pretty substantial improvements taking advantage to the strategies that exist when markets are down.
Well, great stuff as always, guys. I know that a lot of people are worried about kind of where markets are, and it can be very painful through all this, but keep that perspective and work with an advisor that can help you maintain that long-term view, and that's what Dan and Brent do over at Avery Wealth. So you have questions for them, again, start with averywealth.com, but you can always call directly at 517-783-1695. Well, that'll do it for us on this episode of the Retirement Cafe. Guys, thanks as always. Look forward to doing it again soon.
Thank you.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ben.
Avery Wealth, Inc. is a registered investment advisor registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Registration as an investment advisor does not imply a certain level of skill or training, and the content of this communication has not been approved or verified by the SEC or by any state securities authority. The information contained in this podcast is intended to provide general information about Avery Wealth and its services. It is not intended to offer investment advice. Investment advice will only be given after a client engages our services by executing the appropriate investment services agreement. Information regarding investment products and services are provided solely to read about our investment philosophy and our strategy. You should not rely on any information provided on our website in making investment decisions. Market data, articles, and other content in this podcast are based on generally available information and are believed to be reliable. Avery Wealth does not guarantee the accuracy of the information contained in this podcast. Avery Wealth will provide all prospective clients with a copy of our current form ADV Part 2A disclosure brochure prior to commencing an advisory relationship. However, at any time, you can view our current form ADV Part 2A at advisorinfo.sec.gov. In addition, you can contact us to request a hard copy.